The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests, and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. Today we welcome Jim and Karen Dosdall, who served in Chennai, India. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
We talked just a minute before we started this program about a little bit about your background, and I'm fascinated. The first thing that just jumped out to me, Brother Dosdall, is you're a convert to the church. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I joined the church while I was in college, actually. I'm not used to doing things in a conventional way, so I went off to Godless Harvard and became a Mormon there.
Under the tutelage of Truman Madsen.
Yes, who was the mission president at the time. And I loved to argue religion. And yes, he could spade me under. And we were already married by the time I joined the church. So we had not had an opportunity to, I had not had an opportunity to serve a mission. So we had planned all our adult lives that after I retired, that's something we'd like to do.
What did you do for a living, Brother Dosdall?
I was a engineer at Ford Motor Company in their research department. Kind of a fun job, but didn't need to have a hobby with a job like that.
No, you wouldn't. And in the Detroit area?
Yes.
And that's where you met and were married? Or?
Oh, no. We met in Oregon in high school and then lived in Boston for a while and then came to Salt Lake and tried to do the entrepreneurial thing right after college, but it didn't work near as well as it did for Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. And then after 10 years as an entrepreneur, went to work for the big boys.
In Detroit.
Yes.
Interesting. Right. Sister Dosdall, then, a Utah native or Oregon native?
Oregon native.
Okay.
Yes.
So quite a history there, a lot of travel. So
a little bit.
Were you then ready to open up the mission papers and see India?
Well, yes. When we planned on going on a mission, I retired a little early because the auto industry was on its way down, and I got out while the getting was good. And I thought, okay, we can go on a mission soon. But as we prayed about it, I kept feeling it's not quite ready yet, not quite time. So after a couple of years, we got the feeling, yes, now it's time. Now it's time to put in the papers. I wanted to do something a little bit exciting.
And I was so afraid of a foreign language, but I thought exciting would be good, not a conventional location. But we left it in the Lord's hands, and he called us where we should go, and we were so grateful for that.
Did you have a big family gathering when you opened the envelopes? How did that play out?
Yes. All of the local people were in the room, and those away were on the telephones. And
so we had Skype, and so yeah, it was great.
Had a whole family occasion of it.
Yes.
So
they could hardly hear us through my squeals when we received our call to Bangalore, India.
When you read Bangalore, India, what's the first thing that goes through your mind? Do you recall that moment, like where or why, or are there missionaries? What are we going to do?
We really didn't have any idea of the church's presence in India at all. And in fact, Bangalore, I knew, I knew that much geography. But when we read on to the next sentence there saying that we'd be humanitarian missionaries assigned to the LDS Charities office in Chennai, India, I thought, Chennai, I've never heard of that. It wasn't until after everybody went away and I could get back on the web and find out, where is Chennai, that I found it was the former Madras.
Which a city was, of 10 million people in India. So,
which about 8 years ago, in a fit of nationalism, they changed the name back to something a little more historic rather than British.
Interesting. When how much time did you have to prepare from the time the letter came to the time you departed? Do you recall?
Pretty typical, about 3 months.
About 3 months. Yeah. So there's a little bit of time to put your life in order now. You mentioned
right.
12 children. Is that correct?
We had 13.
13.
We lost a son while we were on a mission.
That must have been heartbreaking.
That was hard.
Very difficult.
Do you have an option to come home during that time, or do you just make the decision that you're going to stay? And how does that work?
You do have an option. Senior couples have a lot more flexibility than the younger elders. And with the travel time and expense and all, and with Skype now, we're in regular contact with their family, I felt like we could be in better touch with them during the critical hours than if we were up in an airplane somewhere. And so we elected to stay there, sit by our Skype. We didn't do much missionary work for a few days, but we kept in touch with the family that way. It's a wonderful age we live in, where you can transport yourself electronically, if not physically.
And that was difficult, and have some kind of mixed emotions about that. But we were able to be in touch with everyone that way.
So you get correspondence from the church telling you basically probably what to pack, what to expect. Is there kind of a background? So all the luggage is packed to get on the airplane. Where do you fly first? What's your first stop out of the country? Do you go right into India, or do you go someplace else first?
Well, our trip, both coming and going, we stopped in Frankfurt, Germany. The route is the polar route. In fact, on our return trip, we beat the Icelandic volcano by about 2 weeks. We came right over that area coming back. It's a polar route you take to get from here to India.
And it's halfway around the world. We were 11 and a half hours ahead in India as far as time. So we had to watch that on our Skyping.
That would get somebody out of bed in a hurry, wouldn't it? Sure. Today we're welcoming Jim and Karen Dosdall, who served in Chennai, India. Okay, we go to Frankfurt, and we end up in, was it Bombay? What's your first city in India that you land in? Did you recall? Chennai?
We went right into Bangalore. The mission headquarters is in Bangalore, and we had a few hours briefing there before we were sent off to our assignment in Chennai.
We stayed overnight. So.
Yeah, letter of call said we'd be working in the Chennai office of LDS Charities. We soon discovered that this was the extra bedroom in our apartment. The nearest other missionary couple was 200 miles away. We were the office.
That's very interesting.
We worried about how far it would be to the office.
And that was it.
Down the hall.
It was right there.
Yeah.
Okay. What was your first impression as you get off the airplane? I imagine there's a couple that meet you there. You get into the car for the first time. What are you thinking when you're driving down the road that first day?
Oh, my goodness. Everything was so different. The first impression, of course, was that it was hot and humid, and this was wintertime, we later found out. So it was incredibly hot and humid, and then the streets were so crowded with everything, and it was not the U.S. That was our first impression. This is not the U.S.
Yeah, everything is different, even in areas where you wouldn't have to be. I mean, the light switches flip the other direction. The toilets are different. We probably shouldn't go into that.
But, the clothing, the food.
Yes, everything is different. Even down to the way they write numbers. We're used to writing numbers in thousands and a thousand thousands, a million, and a thousand million is a billion. In India, they go to thousands, and then 100,000 is a lakh, and 100 lakhs is a crore. And you set off your commas every two places instead of every three. Things like this that you wouldn't even think of that are different that you have to get used to.
The paper size is different. The pencils are different. Everything seemed to be.
So there's not a standard printer that you could take a U.S. printer and...
Most of the things you buy will accommodate a wide variety of paper sizes. So we had to deal with the European standard A4 sheets instead of letter size. But, you know, every little thing like this is somewhat different, and it takes some getting used to.
Now, are you there replacing someone that's going home, or are you just really kind of... we're starting from scratch on these projects?
Well, we probably should talk about the projects we actually did. Mm-hmm. We were preceded by missionary couples who had left a few months before. India seems to have perpetual problems with visas, and so continuity is always an issue. There'd been a couple of months hiatus between the previous couple and us, And we did get the chance to meet them before we left the U.S., though.
Which was very helpful.
So we got briefed by them. When we left India, there were visa problems again, and there's not a couple there replacing us yet. We hope to meet them when this finally gets resolved and they get someone in there to pick up where we left off. But there's, again, a break in the continuity.
Mm-hmm. Is it a political problem or just a logistical problem getting the paperwork?
Well, it's
without
political.
Getting into anything, you know.
It's political. And there are a lot of things in the world that are contributing to it right mm-hmm. now. India is very nationalistic, very proud. They even getting a work visa to go into India. They're being flooded from the east, from China and Southeast Asian countries. And so they're very protective about Indian jobs. Missionaries, well, yeah, missionaries come and do good, and the Congress Party will let them in, but the BJP doesn't want them. And so it all depends on local politics. And right now in the depressed worldwide economy, the U.S. is not renewing green cards for some Indian engineers that are here, so there's retaliation on that. So it's all very complicated.
Mm-hmm. So as I understand, you worked in orphanages. Mm-hmm. Were there someone to kind of show you the ropes, or did you just kind of come into town and somebody said, over there is an orphanage, go to work, or how does that work?
Well, the particular orphanage that we worked at had missionary couples there, two missionary couples before us. And the story of how they became associated with the LDS Church is a miracle in itself, and we won't have time to tell that whole story. But as we arrived, there had been previous missionary couples. And this orphanage was 60 miles outside of Chennai. It was a two-hour drive.
Let's stop here. How do you get there? Do you drive? Do you take – is there rickshaws?
No.
I've heard stories about rickshaws that are frightening. How do you get there?
Yes. Well, in India, they have a well-developed public transportation system. A lot of people ride buses. Most people travel on two wheels, motorcycles.
Okay.
Entire families travel on motorcycles. So you get four, maybe five people on a little 100cc motorcycle traveling all over the place, mm-hmm. out into the countryside, everywhere.
So you're taking then a bus to
actually hired a driver.
Oh, okay.
Probably learn to drive on the wrong side of the road and dodge the buses and the ox carts and the pedestrians and all of those things. But finding where I was going was completely out of the question. We had to have a native for that.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, we hired a driver, and he would take us out to this. Well, the previous couple had had involvement with the branches in Chennai. There were two branches in the city of 10 million people. Then also an assignment out at this orphanage 2 hours out in the countryside. When we arrived, there was another missionary couple came. They kind of took over the in-town stuff, and we spent all of our attention at the Pathway Orphanage. Which is a residency school, which provided education, kindergarten through 10th grade, and their big watershed exams at the end of 10th grade that determines whether you're college prep or whether you're vocational or whether you go get a job right now. They had about 200 kids at this orphanage. The director is a member of the church. But he was the only one. The rest of the staff were all Indian, mostly Hindu, a few Christian,
and he is an Indian doctor, but mm-hmm.
A
convert.
He joined
the church
18 years ago, so he invites the missionaries to come there.
We provides a place for mm-hmm. them, and
we had a little cottage there to live in, which was very comfortable but very Indian. We taught in their school curriculum English and values. There, the syllabus is written by the state, and the state of Tamil Nadu includes 1 hour per week of values/life education. And so we had an opportunity to teach ethics, morals, gospel principles.
Family home evening mm-hmm. a second time. So we worked primarily with the kids grades 5 through 10. Because the younger ones, their primary language is Tamil, and that's not ours. It's totally different than English. So by the time they got to fifth grade, we could communicate quite well.
though, and this was an English medium matriculation school. That is to say, all the classes were supposed to be taught in English, except their one Tamil course. Most of the public schools were Tamil medium. They had a required English course. A matriculation school, it was college prep. That's where these kids were supposed to be aiming for. Tamil. I thought, okay, even though we are supposed to be operating in English, it would be fun to know a little of the local language. So I got a Tamil in 30 Days book and looked at it, got as far as the first page, discovered there are 247 characters in the alphabet, and I got stuck right there.
247. All right. How then, you mentioned by the time they get to the fifth grade, they were speaking some English. What yes. happens to one through five?
Well, there's an interesting story into that, and let's go to that. They most of the kids there come equipped with Tamil. That's their native language. And this school just starts them at kindergarten or lower kindergarten. They'll take in four-year-olds. So orphans have been in some other orphanage for their first 3 or 4 years. And so they come in with the rudiments of Tamil, except for a few kids that came from other states. And every state line you cross is a different language. Not only a different language,
different
but written
characters.
In a different script. Language is an intractable problem in English in India. English is the common denominator, but it's English is spoken sort of everywhere, sort of. But as far as the program there and what we did, we were largely involved with running the church programs. We taught seminary, mutual family home evening. Just a few months before we arrived, they had arranged for a home group to meet at the orphanage. So they didn't have to bus into the city, this two-hour trip each way every Sunday. And so they had their Sunday meetings there as well. And the orphanage director was a member of the church, held the priesthood, and a fellow who was a long-term member of the church who also ran a little orphanage a few miles away was included in this home group. And so we had the three of us as priesthood holders, three adults, four adults basically to run the whole show. And there were 26 baptized members out of these 200 kids. Of those 26 members, 32 attended seminary regularly.
40.
And in the next year, 49. Of our 26 members were attending seminary regularly.
This year it should be 60-some.
And these are young people.
Yes.
In families or converts, kind of just single young people, or how did that work?
Well, this school was basically an orphanage mm-hmm. school. It gave priority to orphans, mm-hmm. children without parents, no one to take
orphans.
Care of them. Second priority was to semi-orphans. Family is very strong in India. You live in extended families, multi-generational families, and the patriarch takes care of you all of your life until he dies, makes all your financial decisions for you, decides who you will marry. Family is very tight and very strong. So if you – in the U.S., if you lose one parent, you have a single-parent family.
Mm-hmm.
In India, if you lose one parent, you are a semi-orphan. It's a different way of looking at it.
Is there a difference with if you lose your mother or your father? Is it the same?
They're still both called semi-orphans.
Okay.
More frequently, it's the father who is gone from abandonment or something of that sort.
Because the women are not able to provide a living as well, usually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the school had some orphans, some semi-orphans, and some destitute children from families who maybe have two parents, but they can't afford to feed them.
Okay.
And so this is the admission to this school. We soon also found out that there must be some other sorting process going on somewhere, because these were not your average kids, not a random cross section. These kids were spiritually sensitive. The Lord had brought them there for a purpose.
Interesting.
I don't know how the Lord decides who he's going to send to India to be an orphan, but he definitely had his way of pulling strings as to who he sent to the Pathway Orphanage, where they could receive the gospel and be taught the principles of the gospel.
And these kids had a level of spirituality that you just don't often see among a group of young people.
Sister Dazzle, you were talking about maybe 60 attending seminary. Equal number of young men and young women, predominantly young men. What is that?
Because girls cost more for Indian families to raise, they are more often put in the orphanage or find their way into the orphanage. So there were more girls than boys. And in fact, it's illegal in India to find the sex of a baby before its birth because there was enough female infanticide that this has become against the law.
That's very interesting. So we have a big seminary class, and you're in charge of that.
Mm-hmm.
Lessons each week just from the church material, or is there anything different or unusual about this?
No, we were teaching from the church materials, the standard materials, 3 mornings a week. It was not a home study program at the Pathway Orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the kids in the branches in town that had more trouble getting together got together on Saturday afternoon for a home study type of program. But we had an early morning seminary. And from the standard materials, the things that were different, we got permission from the CES directors to make it a 7th grade through 10th grade program instead of 9th through 12th. That meant that by the time they finished it at Pathway, they had 4 years of seminary. Other than that, that's about the only difference, I think.
We had a lot of preparation to cover the classes that we had. I figured that on many weeks I would have 17 separate preparations for school classes and the classes that we taught, and Jim had additional ones because he was the one that ended up with teaching seminary. And, of course, we had we were totally involved in the home branch there, which met every week except one in the month when the older children were bused to Chennai to keep up some acquaintance with the branch there.
What is a branch like in Chennai? Is it just large, like we would walk into any other branch in the world?
Pretty much, yes. There were two branches, and in fact, there was a third organized within the last month. They're building a new building there, the church's first building in Chennai. It's in a very busy intersection. It will be a landmark. It will attract a lot of attention once that's completed early next year. The church is growing. But maybe just a word about the Mormon population density in India. India is about a third the geographical area of the U.S., but four times the population,
mm-hmm.
about 1.1 billion people. There are about 7,000 Latter-day Saints there. The first were baptized in about 1965. The church has been growing steadily, and we see a real blossoming. A real pent-up demand. Oh, I could tell you a favorite story about that, too. Though we were humanitarian missionaries and did most of our work with the children at the orphanage school, we did occasionally have a little proselyting work to do.
Mm-hmm.
We were set apart for that as well. We were given two name badges, one that had our first name on it and said LDS Charities, and one that said Elder and Sister on it,
mm-hmm.
and just like the proselyting missionaries would have.
And another note here, I might just say that after the first month, we were not Elder and Sister Dazzle. We were Grandpa and Grandma to all the kids who, of course, did not have their families. They saw their families 2 to 3 weeks out of the year.
So you inherited another big family.
Oh, we did.
Indeed.
And they
yes.
were our kids. And even the staff at Pathway called us Grandpa and Grandma. So that's who we felt like we were during our mission.
Yes, an extension of our family responsibilities at home, basically. These kids didn't have anybody for the the touch, the hugs, the
support,
the talk, the
yeah.
What was Relief Society like in a little branch that you attended?
Well, I usually went when we went to the once a month to Chennai. I usually went to young women's or to primary because no one could play the piano. And I was so – this was another responsibility that we had, an opportunity to help the kids learn the fundamentals of music. And we had 30 eager piano students that would wait their turn, as well as some – keyboards, so both of us were involved in this. So I didn't get to Relief Society.
So you're teaching English, you're teaching seminary, you're teaching piano lessons.
And the church program.
And the church program. And you're very busy.
Yes.
Oh, yes,
English
indeed.
And values, yeah. And choir and all kinds of things.
And the children loved music. Choir practice was one of their favorite things.
And, of course, their music was the hymns of the church and the primary songs. And they sang with great gusto. One of the choice experiences that we would have, and I'd play the piano and cry as we'd hear them sing with great sincerity, because I have been given much, realizing that they weren't out on the streets and that they did have the gospel in their lives. And this was of great meaning to them, and it certainly spilled over to us.
What is their future, those in the orphanage?
Because they are there, they have a future. Otherwise, they'd be street beggars or following a cow around somewhere. But because they're receiving an education, because they are learning English, they will be able to move into the modern India, which exists in the cities. There is a strong IT industry there. There's a lot of international commerce and connections, a lot of international business. So knowledge of English is a very important thing for these kids to have. These kids in particular will be the leaders of the church in India in the future.
It's amazing to see the great desire on their part to be faithful members of the church, and how important that is, how competent they are at conducting meetings, at giving prayers, at teaching. While we were there, Jim felt it was so important to reach the younger kids, whom we couldn't communicate with because they were largely Tamil speakers. And so in a two-phase move, we organized a primary for the 100 kids that were pre-seminary age. And, of course, we didn't have teachers who could teach in Spanish, in Tamil, except for our students. So we had kids that were 13, 14, 15,
you had kids teaching kids.
As the teachers. Wow. So we would have, we ended up having 12.
Well, I'll tell you the story. We decided that the missing link, we are not serving the younger kids. We had pretty good programs going for 12 and up, but the younger kids were not getting anything. They weren't getting bussed into Chennai before because the two-hour bus ride wore them out. They weren't good for anything by the time they got there.
They didn't have the method of transportation, not a big enough bus.
And so we felt prompted that we needed to organize primary. And so we laid it out very carefully. We were going to do a teacher development course for a couple of months for some of our seminary students. We decided we'd phase in the senior half of primary, age 8 and up first. We'd need about 6 classes. So we thought we'd train 12 teachers so they could team teach. Invited about 15 of our best seminary students to teacher development on a Sunday morning before meetings, and 28 showed up.
Consistently.
Yeah. The first day that we were going to have teacher development, we planned to start primary a couple months later after we'd had them trained. The rumor got around that we were going to start primary, and 60 kids showed up ready for primary.
Oh, dear.
Of course, we were a little panicked, but one of our 13-year-old students said, "Don't worry, Grandpa, we've got it taken care of." And she took us into a room where she had the blackboard all prepared. She had lesson materials prepared. I kind of suspect that Monisha had spread the rumor herself. She was so eager to get primary going. But from that day forward, we had primary. After we got these classes all going, we trained some more teachers and phased in the junior half of the primary. And when we found that after we were going to leave, there would not be a couple to replace us immediately because of the visa issues, now 14-year-old Monisha is our functioning primary president. 16-year-old Meenakshi, who was one of the piano students, plays the music for singing time.
And helps with conducting.
And the two of them run the program.
And we have 20 other students as teachers. And so they are doing a primary with 100 children with 22 kids
between the age of
13 through 16.
Duly set apart under the authority of the branch president. But yes, probably the largest primary in India is being run by 14 and 16-year-olds.
Is that an amazing story? Wow. As you look back, we always like to ask something that really touched you, something that stands out. And everybody says, well, there can't be a highlight. There was just too many things. But one of the highlights of your mission.
There was another orphanage about 20 miles away, Rising Star Outreach, which is another story in itself. You can go to their website and see that. Run by LDS people. One of their security guards, one of the LDS folks got talking to him, found out that he was Christian and was interested in religion. And he told an interesting story. He had grown up in a nearby village, village entirely Hindu. In fact, he had been a Hindu priest in his young years. But he was a bright fellow. He learned English. He went to the city. He got a job in a bank. He was doing very well. But he had a health problem. There was something that was bothering him for a couple of years, and he couldn't seem to do anything with it. He'd go to a doctor, and they'd check him all over and say, well, it's not my specialty. I don't know what it is. And he couldn't find any help. Till one day he found a magazine that talked about faith healing. It said, if you have faith in Jesus Christ, you can be healed. So he wrote a letter to the editor and described his situation. They wrote back and said, yes, if you have faith in Jesus Christ, you can be healed. And about 3 days later, his symptoms disappeared and did not return. And he decided, oh, I should find out something about this Jesus Christ. So he went to various churches here and there, and everybody had a different story and taught different principles. To make a long story short, he ended up enrolling in a theological seminary and studied for 2 years to become a minister, figuring that that was the way to find out what's the real story. Meanwhile, he got a picture of Jesus and put it up in his little shrine in his house and started praying to it. But he studied for the ministry and felt called to go back to his native village and bring Christianity to his village. And about a fourth of the village joined his church. And then the folks in the next village said, come preach to us. So he started a church there. He had three congregations going. These were all poor village people, though, and they couldn't offer any support. So he was working as a security guard to feed his family at this other orphanage. But he was a Christian minister. And so these folks showed him the Book of Mormon, and he was very interested in it. They gave him a copy of Gospel Principles, and he could read English, so he could handle all of this. And he started reading the Book of Mormon. You know, as a security guard, you got a lot of time to read. But he set it down after a few days and woke up in the middle of the night with a voice telling him, read the Book of Alma. Well, he hadn't got to Alma yet. So he read the Book of Alma and found that it answered questions that had bothered him all of his life. And he was reading in Gospel Principles and came to the story from Elder Packer about the unwise debtor, explaining how the atonement works. And he was just astonished. Now I understand it. Now I can teach my people. He began teaching his congregations out of the Book of Mormon and using Gospel Principles as his teaching text. One day when we came to teach, the elders in town said, hey, this guy way out in the countryside that wants to hear about the church, we can't get out there. Can you go teach him? So we went and met with him a number of times. One time when we came to teach him, there was another minister sitting there. And most missionaries know this is bad news. Uh-huh. Well, this minister explained that he was the leader of a ministerial association in a nearby town of Kanchipuram. And he wanted to invite us to come speak to his group. So we came, spoke for about an hour and a half about how the Lord has always dealt with his people through prophets, how people have not listened, and he's had to restore dispensations, how in modern history the gospel has been restored again, along with some other ancient scriptures called the Book of Mormon. We explained what that was, gave them copies of the Book of Mormon in Tamil, a few for those that could read English. We gave them in English. After the meeting, many people came up and
explained to them that they could not have the gospel at this point.
Explained that the Book of Mormon was here, the gospel has been restored to the earth, the church is coming, but it is not here yet. Because the present policy in India is that you only teach English speakers who can receive their instructions, get a solid foundation of the gospel in English.
Who are within reach of the church.
And who are close enough to a center of strength that they can attend their meetings.
Okay.
The church does not want to baptize people and then abandon them. We had to explain to them, prepare the way. The church is coming. It is not here yet.
For it, be ready when
it
comes.
So Pastor John was sharing this with all of his friends. Before we left, we had to leave him a couple more cases of the Book of Mormon in Tamil because he had more friends to distribute them to. At last count, there were 8 congregations in Kanchipuram, Assembly of God congregations who were being taught out of the Book of Mormon. There is this waiting demand for enough of us to be able to go over there and carry it to them.
And that is a fascinating story. They're just waiting for the gospel. Here we take it for granted every day, and that's all they're thinking about is get it to us, get it to us.
And they may have to wait for years for baptism. The mission president, President Nichols, said, "Your story is not unique. I run into this all over the place. It's frustrating. We just don't have the strength to baptize these people because we don't have the strength to serve them once they are baptized."
Interesting.
This is the case with our children at Pathway as well. There's such caution about baptizing them because of the church's position, because of some of their family situation, that many of them would like to be baptized and have not been able to. And so some of them may have to wait 5 to 10 years for baptism, and yet they may be teaching primary, getting 100% attendance at seminary, reading their scriptures and praying every day.
Well, see, that's
still waiting
faithful,
for baptism.
That is startling to
faithful
me.
Members without being baptized.
That is absolutely amazing. We have to hurry.
We have to get more people over there. We have to send people.
There is urgency.
Yes, we have to send people.
Anything that we have missed that you would like to talk about?
Well, I guess I'd say just a few more words about the kids there. Before we left, we wanted to make sure that those that wanted to be baptized would have the opportunity. And so we invited about 15 of our seminary students who were regular attenders at seminary who had not been baptized to have the missionary discussions. And again, about 30 showed up. We taught them the entire missionary discussion series. And then noting that a couple of them had missed a couple of lessons along the way, things like this happen, we said, okay, we'll offer the series again for a review. Those of you that missed one or two can come back. And the second time through, just to make sure that we hadn't been talking over their heads, we had a couple of our students, well, Monisha and Velu, a 16-year-old priest, the only priest we had in the group, to act as translators so that we would teach a principle in English. They would translate it into Tamil just to make sure that the kids were understanding everything that we were saying. On the review time around with the missionary discussions, 30 of them showed up again.
Every kid came back for the second round of
and we used Monisha and Velu as translators. We would teach a principle out of Preach My Gospel, and we had given them copies of Preach My Gospel too, so they knew what they were talking about. And then they would teach it in Tamil. And occasionally I would find myself picking up on keywords, names of prophets or something, and thinking, oh, I should have taught that. I forgot to. These kids were teaching the gospel with such authority, with such conviction, with such fluency and power that, well, it brings tears to my eyes. These kids are well prepared to be leaders of the church as the time approaches.
And even if they end up in the big city where there are branches, can they then be baptized where there's a branch, or there's still going to be a waiting period for them?
If they're near enough to the branch, and if they're whatever family they have, and many of these kids have aunts, uncles, cousins that have some interest in them, have no objection, then they will be baptized. Otherwise, they may have to wait until they are 19, which is their legal age of majority, to make the decision themselves.
And okay. Some of them know that. Some of our key children could not be baptized because they had not received permission or the blessings of their family.
Sister Dosdall, could we close by bearing your testimony of this work, how you felt about this wonderful opportunity you had of serving in India?
There were sacrifices that we made to go on a mission. We lost a son while we were there. We had four grandchildren born, our first great-grandchild, and a marriage in the family. And yet, none of these sacrifices compared with the blessings that we received. We feel like we have been bound forever with some of these choice young people, and that we were a blessing to their life as they were to ours. And in no way does our sacrifice even compare with the blessings that we received while we were serving this wonderful family that we obtained while we were in India. And I think we will have a link with these children forever. And so I am so grateful for this opportunity of going on a mission and for this wonderful call that we had to go to India, which little unbeknownst to us was the perfect calling for us.
Thank you. We've been listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today we've been visiting with Brother and Sister Dosdall, who served in India. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.